Dress, the History of Fashion is a production of iHeartRadio. With over 7 billion people in the world, we all have one thing in common. Every day, we all get dressed.
Welcome to Dressed, the History of Fashion, a podcast where we explore the who, what, when of why we wear. We are fashion historians and your hosts, Cassidy Zachary
and April Callahan. Dress listeners, welcome to our brand new format for our minisode, which we are calling Fashion History Now.
Yeah, so we thought this would be really kind of a fun way for us to discuss everything that's happening in the world of fashion history and fashion, you know, kind of in the now, what happened in the last couple weeks, last month. And it also just provides us with a platform to share with you all the things that we are currently excited about that may not relate to whatever episode we're airing, full episode we're airing this week. So yeah, we're pretty excited about this.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of things that I have been excited about, Cass, as you already know, I went to study hall recently. No, I didn't get detention. It was actually the exact opposite of detention. It was this really beautiful, amazing 6-hour experience that happened a few weeks ago here in New York City. Study hall is an educational conference which is organized by Slow Factory and Slow Factory's co-founder, Celine Simon. And it was this amazing 6-hour experience of hearing from designers, scientists, educators, and activists, all on the topic of climate positivity at scale within the fashion industry. So I know that you actually watched it online. So you, our dress listeners, can also watch it online. Yeah. How did you feel about Study Hall?
Well, first of all, it's an annual free summit on sustainable fashion. So anyone can get tickets and go, which is so cool. And then she also puts it all online. So people mm-hmm. like myself and all our dress listeners who could not make the event, you can see this incredible, conference and bringing together of all of these people that are working on sustainable fashion. So like, how do we build a better, more sustainable, ethic conscious fashion industry now and for the future? So I was very excited about this event and very excited to watch it, even if I wasn't there in person.
Yeah. And there were actually 700 people there in person. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. They were estimating that it was going to be something like 500. And it was actually held at the New York Times Center, which is this beautiful event space and auditorium. And they had to turn the tea room that they set up downstairs into an overflow room.
Well, that's exciting.
I know. People were super into it. It was just an incredible day. I left so inspired. There were so many panelists that were amazing.
Right.
And including the person who opened the conference is our past guest, Karina Emmerich. And she did this really beautiful dedication. She's a Native American fashion designer. And she did this really beautiful recognition of the land that NYC sits on as being the home of the Lenape people who were moved to Oklahoma in the 1860s. So the whole day was really great. And I don't know what your takeaways were, but my takeaways from the day were that planetary health is human health,
right,
that climate change is a human rights issue.
Mm-hmm.
And also so many panelists, it kept coming back again and again and again that there's this direct correlation between environmental abuses and human rights abuses.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to go into like hella detail here, but you can jump on Study Hall yourself and listen in if you want to. But it was eye-opening, inspirational, heartbreaking at times, but really, really great.
Yeah. And so Karina opened the show with that powerful land acknowledgement, like April just said. And then Whitney McGuire did this powerful labor acknowledgement. So you have the land acknowledgement and then you have the labor acknowledgement. You know, this country is built on the backs of millions of enslaved African Americans. So it's kind of just this reminder of where we come from so that we can move forward to a brighter future, you know, with acknowledging where we came from and where this country comes from and how it was built.
Mm-hmm. And who have been the custodians of this country before us?
Yeah. I mean, Karina Just to quote her, she said, Indigenous people make up 4% of the world's population, and we are still protecting 80% of the world's biosystems. You know, and she didn't explicitly say this, but she kind of reminded us that while, you know, Greta Thunberg is, you know, a powerful white activist, she's become the face of climate change. Indigenous activists have been fighting for the last 2 centuries to protect their land. But yeah, my main takeaways also are that climate change is a human rights issue. I think you have panelist Lillian Liu, who said 1 in 6 people in the world work in a job related to fashion. That's 60 million people worldwide, and only about 2% earn a living wage. So, you know, lots of really powerful stuff. Climate positivity was the theme. So, quote, to quote Slow Factory, going back to our roots of living in harmony with nature by providing sustainable, scalable solutions for the long term with ecologically regenerative practices and projects in alignment with environmental justice for Black, Brown, and Indigenous communities. And something I thought was so cool, and I know I think I called you to talk about it, April, was the 1x1 Conscious Design Initiative, which is so cool. It's this partnership between the Slow Factory Foundation and Swarovski, supported by the UN. And they basically, it's these partnerships for a sustainable future. So you're pairing fashion designers with scientists, for instance, and designer Telfar Clemens is paired with scientist Theanne Skyros.
Yeah. She's a professor at FIT.
Yeah. And my mind was literally blown.
I think we need to have her on the show. And in fact, after we get done recording this, I'm just going to email her and be like, hi, would you like to come on the show?
Yeah, because not only is she working with her students at FIT to bioengineer leather and algae-based yarn. So just think about that for a second, trust listeners. She was talking about it on study hall about how you can grow leather in shapes essentially, so without even having to sew it, because the algae will just, you know, form to itself around a mold. She has this incredible company called AlgaeNet, with, you know, their motto is biology is the future of fashion, and they promote this closed loop product life cycle. So many cool things happening, and I think you should absolutely ask her on the show. That would be really, really cool to hear more about bio leather.
And it's all like, it's all biodegradable in the end, because when it's made from natural products, then it can degrade and it doesn't become an issue in terms of like waste.
Yeah.
One thing that I found fascinating and frankly terrifying that I took away from the conference was the fact that on average, we ingest 5 grams of microplastics per week.
Oh my gosh. I know.
And if you don't realize how much 5 grams is, basically that's the equivalent of swallowing a credit card every week.
I mean, they're finding microplastics in breast milk, snow, and the water you drink. So
yeah. So it was like when that fact went out, when that slide went up, I mean, the room went silent. Like you could have heard a pin drop. I don't want to make it all seem gloom and doom. There were some really upsetting things, but this is what educating ourselves about this entails, right? We need to learn these scary facts in order to course correct.
Yep, absolutely. And I think actually if this show showed us anything, or it's that there's hope still. There is so many people that were on that stage are doing incredible work. And, you know, we all just need to be the change we want to see in the world. And it really does start with us, be it our consumer dollars, how we spend our money and how we buy our clothes. We make a huge impact.
Yeah. And if you want to check out exactly what we're talking about, you can head over to studyhall.earth. That's not .com. That's not .org. studyhall.earth. And you can actually watch this entire 6-hour long conference symposium online for free. So.
Yeah. And April, actually, I think I'm going to skip ahead in our show notes, because I think you have something really cool that our listeners can also do to understand what their fashion footprint actually is.
Yeah. So the company ThredUp, which is a secondhand clothing online retailer, they did this really cool thing recently. They created what's it's like a basically a fashion footprint quiz. And the quiz asks you questions about your shopping frequency, whether you shop online or in stores. What are your laundry and dry cleaning habits? How do you dispose of your clothes? You know, how much do you buy secondhand? Do you rent, et cetera? They ask you all these questions. And then at the end, you get a takeaway as to what your fashion footprint is. So I took a quiz. I took it a couple times just to make sure that there wasn't any kind of like wiggle room. But apparently I qualify as a green queen.
Shocking.
I know. So my fashion footprint is 82% lower than the average consumer. I contribute 292 pounds of carbon emissions annually versus the average of 1,620 pounds.
And that still feels high, right? The 256. But then when you learn the like mine was 256. So when you compare it to what the average is, it's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm sure you know your stat too, but my annual fashion carbon footprint is equivalent of 1.8 flights between LA and San Francisco annually.
Yeah, mine was very similar, 1.6. So, but still, it just feels like so much. Mine was 256 pounds of carbon emissions annually. Mm-hmm. Whoa. Just on the clothing. And that doesn't have to do with everything else that we consume or use.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to take this and check out to see where you are on that footprint scale, you can go over to threadup.com/footprint. And thread is THREDUP. So THREDUP.com/fashion footprint. And you can take the quiz yourself. Also, something very cool, for every public share of this quiz, ThreadUp is going to donate $1 to the ThreadUp Circular Fashion Fund, which is dedicated to supporting sustainable fashion efforts worldwide.
And that's very cool.
Yeah. And I'm going to post this on our Instagram feed so you guys can share it however often you want with other people vis-a-vis our Instagram feed.
Fabulous. And just a note that I have put the links to some of these articles that we're talking today and to the ThreadUp and to Study Hall in the actual show notes of our description of the show. So on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you get the description, you can find links to what we're talking about today. So something else that I think everyone should watch, I mean, we are now in the middle of I think Milan Fashion Week started today or yesterday when this episode airs. But I actually want to talk, April, about Haute Couture Fashion Week going back last month because it was Jean-Paul Gaultier's final show.
I know. He's been like working in fashion for almost 50 years, which is incredible.
Yeah. And needless to say, it was epic. Fashion as performance is definitely in Gaultier's very DNA. I actually have a couple fabulous quotes of him talking about when he was a little boy. And he says he dreamed of working on a revue ever since I was a little boy. And I saw opening night of Les Folies Bergères on my grandmother's television. He says he got in trouble at school the next day because I was sketching girls in feathers and fishnets.
See, this is so interesting because there is more than one really well-known couturier out there who basically got inspiration to become a fashion designer by being obsessed with showgirls.
Yeah. I mean, they're pretty fabulous. He says that then I did a review with my teddy bear at home. I pretended he had breasts. And the first cone bra I did was for my teddy bear, not for Madonna. I had a strawberry box for the stage, and I put a lot of feathers on my teddy bear for the headdress. I used feathers from my cleaning brush for the finale. And Gaultier landed his first job in fashion at the age of 17 after he sent in gold and sequin covered fashion sketches to the Haute Couturier, Pierre Cardin. So just like an incredible origin story. And then it just explains so much about him and his performance style and the type of fashion he produces. And his debut show was in 1976. So yeah, coming up on 50 years.
Yeah. And the thing is like, I think that he is retiring from, I think the brand is still kind of going to continue without him. And he may continue to still work on special projects here and there. So he's not going into like hard stop full retirement. He's just kind of like taking it a step back.
Yeah.
And it's
a lot, as we all know.
Yeah, of course, of course. What else?
Oh, Hamish Bowles wrote this really great article about the show, and he says, many of the conversations we are having today about such issues as diversity, gender fluidity, recycling, sustainability are built into the Gaudier DNA. Since his first show in 76, he has shown pan-generational models of all sizes, genders, and ethnicities on his runway because they reflected the real-life people on the streets who inspired his style. And that is exactly what this show did. It was an hour and 10-minute long homage to his prolific career.
And not to mention the fact that the entire show was bookended by performances by Boy George, right?
Oh, yeah. And there was performances throughout the whole show. It was so incredible. It was such a celebration of joy and love. You have models and then muses and his friends that have been making, you know, appearances throughout his career. And so you have all of his most iconic looks. You have underwear as outerwear. You have the famed cone bra. You know, his blue and white striped sweaters and sailor looks. So, so fun. 200 pieces.
So it really was his review come to life.
Oh, yeah. And there was this one male model walks down on point shoes. There are numerous people smoking on stage. I mean, it was definitely something to see. Lots of kink and sex, fashion, fantasy. It was
Which
pure,
has always been part of his work.
Yeah.
For sure.
And it was really a celebration of love. So definitely check it out. It was really incredible. I know I mentioned earlier that Milan Fashion Week started. Haven't watched too many of the fashion shows this season, but New York Times just did this live play-by-play of the Gucci show. Have you seen anything of this, April?
I haven't looked at it yet.
This is all I've seen, and it was via Instagram. So it's often very overwhelming to kind of figure out what shows to watch, but audiences, when they got to the show, they walked into the dressing room and everyone is talking about how they thought they were like in the wrong place. But no, you walked through the dressing room. So you have all the models getting ready and this is all part of the show. And then the audiences take their seats and then the robed models walked past them onto like this covered stage and the curtains dropped. And then you're basically watching a see-through wall of the models getting dressed and all of their like wardrobe people getting them dressed and ready. So it's like all this behind the scenes show. And then they took their places.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool and pretty original.
I mean, I feel like people really get into that behind the scenes thing. Like, I don't know. Did Lourdes show you this one clip when you were in her 20th century history of fashion class of some of the dressers at Dior dressing the models?
No.
Oh, I have it. It's from like maybe like 1949 or 1950. I will find it and I will send it to you. Perhaps we can see if we could potentially share it with some of our listeners too, on some sort of platform. But it's about the models at Dior getting dressed for a fashion show and all of the underpinnings that they were putting on to create the new look silhouette. So there was like a quasi corset and hip pads and like it was intense. But I feel like people really love that kind of what does it really take? What's really going on? Like what level of artifice are we actually functioning at?
Kind of makes you feel a little bit better about yourself.
Yeah,
too.
That's also I think the same reason why people love makeover shows.
Oh yeah.
Right?
The transformation.
Yeah, you can put yourself in that spot and be like, "Oh, I could be that."
Yeah, exactly. Okay, cool. We'll dig that up so we can look at it for sure.
I will.
So something, there's a couple exhibitions April and I want to recommend that you see, starting with the Fashion Institute in Design and Merchandising, FITM, in Los Angeles. They just opened their 28th annual Art of Motion Picture Costume Design exhibition with over 100 costumes from 29 films, including all of the Academy Award nominees. So The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Joker, Little Women, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, they're all there, as well as like Rocketman, Maleficent, and Aladdin. And April and I actually were there last month for the iHeart Podcast Awards. And curators Christina Johnson and Kevin Jones gave us a behind-the-scenes tour of the museum. And we kind of got to walk through the exhibition as they were setting everything up. And it was really cool, right, April?
Yeah, so all the mannequins were pretty much dressed, but they were still in the middle of installation. So it was pretty intense. My boyfriend got super excited by the Captain America images that I had on my phone, which they asked me not to share publicly, and I did not, but I did have them on my phone, and he looked at them on my phone when I came home. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah, the costumes were really beautiful, and it was so nice to see some of that craftsmanship and all that work up close, like really up close on those costumes.
Yeah,
and they're not meant to last per se past production. You know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah. Although, like you said, the craftsmanship that goes into making these, most of these costumes are draped from scratch. They're made completely from scratch by incredibly skilled, you know, cutter, fitters, seamstresses, you know, dyers, agers, everything that goes into the production of those costumes. And I think you and I were both very excited or like maybe mesmerized by that sparkly baseball ensemble from Rocket Man, which was so fun to see in person.
It was entirely rhinestoned. Like, and just see it up close in person, you're just like, wow. Like, somebody sat here for countless hundreds of hours applying
right.
rhinestones to this yeah. baseball
and
uniform.
And it was, yeah, it definitely was worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it was also just really cool to meet Christina and Kevin. They have this incredible exhibition they're prepping, Outdoor Girls Sporting Fashion, 1800 and 1960. So we're going to have them on the show in the next month or two to talk about that. And if you're not already following Fit'em Museum on Instagram, I highly suggest it. They do these really cool unboxing videos every week where they basically unbox a treasure from their collection and tell you all about it. So check it out.
And it's a surprise.
Yes.
So I went to a very cool exhibition this past weekend, I have to say, a little bit late on this calendar, but I went to the Met, to the Costume Institute, and saw the In Pursuit of Fashion exhibition, which is this supreme example of one collector's obsession.
Oh my gosh.
With collecting fashion. Sandy Schreier, it's her collection, and she is one of the preeminent collectors of fashion and costume throughout the world. And this exhibition more or less consists of pieces that she has promised as donations to the Costume Institute. And it was absolutely stunning. I mean, there were some really incredibly rare pieces in this exhibition. A tea gown by Jesse Franklin Turner, who was one of the very earliest American fashion designers to make a name for herself in the 19-teens and the 1920s. Right next to that was a piece by Valentina, which we have already done an entire episode on, the notorious, fabulous, and sometimes shocking Valentina. And a huge chunk of the show cast was all original Fortuny. There were probably at least 20 Fortuny garments in the exhibition. And one other notable piece. I mean, there were so many, I don't even know where to start. But just on the theme of things that we've already talked about on the podcast, there's actually a Charles James dress in the exhibition that is a ready-to-wear version of his swan dress. So,
oh, wow.
A lot of people, if you're not like super into Charles James, might not realize that he did work with the American manufacturer Samuel Winston to produce ready-to-wear collections. They were still tremendously expensive, but you could get a Charles James ready-to-wear. So that was really, really beautiful as well. So
another podcast episode we've done, I think she has one of Patrick Kelly's like button dresses, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. I mean, really, she just has this entire spanning the spectrum of 20th century fashion, you know, from the Campbell Soup dresses to the Mondrian dresses.
She's been working on this for a while. She has like the preeminent collector's eye of like knowing what's important and actually like going out and finding and buying the best quality of all of those things.
So, and fashion, that's art too.
Yeah.
That's part of what she does. She doesn't wear these clothes. She collects them as art because she believes they are art. So, mm-hmm.
And it's open until May. So if you happen to be in New York City, whether you live here or whether you're visiting, you still have time to see this exhibition. So go check it out.
Fantastic. Well, April, that was really fun. I think we've covered quite a lot of things for our listeners to go out and do online or in person.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that brings us to an end of our very first Fashion History Now. As always, please tune in to our full-length episode on Tuesday.
And we love hearing from you. So if you'd like to email us, please do so at dressed@iheartmedia.com. And be sure and follow us along on Instagram at @dressed_podcast.
Thank you, as always, to our producers, Casey Pegram and Holly Fry, and everyone else at iHeartRadio that makes the show possible each and every week. We will see you all, or actually maybe not see you, but we will
talk to you.
Talk to you on Tuesday. Dress, the History of Fashion, is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you listen to your favorite shows.